welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to founders, executives, and evangelists, and we get their insights and their views as to not only how they scale up their businesses, but also how they scale up themselves in the process. And super excited to have Chad here, Chad on the show. Chad's the CEO of CMO Zen out in the US. Prior to this, he's worked in the tech world and tech industry for a number of years, and he's helped a number of businesses reach their goals and scale up. So really excited, Chad, to welcome you into the show, and welcome.
Thank you so much, Richard. I'm delighted to be here and excited to chat a little bit. Hope that your audience finds it interesting and useful.
Cool. And before we dive into it, and I always like to give folk out there bit of a high-level view as to what we're going to be chatting about today. And today we're going to go through some of the essential ingredients of what you need to do and what you need to think about as you build out and also then scale out your business. And, I think business has changed, right, over the last couple of years, definitely. And today, there's a growing number of people that perceive businesses as matrix and digits on a dots on a screen, right? If the computer screen didn't play a big enough role in business today, and before the pandemic, it definitely does today, right? And I don't think I need to go into all that detail. I think we all already know the reasons why. But I guess the good news around this is the internet has actually opened a channel for us. It opened a channel for us to communicate more and communicate thoroughly to our audience about our products and our services. And obviously a bit more, we're able to communicate more than we were back in the day when, the brick and mortar, days were there. And, the advent and the uprise of social media and websites and other MUs allow you to really interact with your public in cyberspace. And the messaging opportunities are, I think you can all agree, are literally endless. But on the flip side, there is some bad news because your competition also has these endless opportunities or capabilities to go out into cyberspace and expand at a rate. Maybe it's phenomenal or not, but at a rate that they want to expand. And, I think the pandemic has really acted as some sort of second coming or maybe a second big bang, making the space even more crowded than it was sort of pre-pandemic. And, there's a challenge for us. There's a challenge for us as business owners and executives because we need to stand out. We don't want to be a business that is a lost dwarf, I think is the word, in the vastness of space. We want to be noticed. So the question becomes, how do we get noticed? How do we make certain that our customer looks at us and sees the value, sees that we care, and wants to engage with us and wants to have a conversation with us because we have a memorable identity? And we're going to answer some of those questions today. We're going to go deep into some of these topics. But let's start at the beginning and bring Chad into the show. And, even before the internet and the advent or the uprise of social, ultimately, business is, for want of a better word, is about coming up with an idea and executing on that idea, however fancy or however innovative or distinguishable that idea is. But Chad, what do you think about this idea process? Is it a essential ingredient for folk out there to actually start a business? Or is there something else in the background that we should be focusing on more as we look to start up and then build a business?
Yeah, sure. The short answer, I think, is sure. Having an idea that is compelling and that sort of spark of inspiration around solving a compelling problem, I think, is essential. I teach courses in venture capital at the University of Utah, and I consult with mostly early stage companies And a lot of times people have an idea or they're looking for an idea. I'll approach that from two angles. One is the idea needs to be compelling to you. But when it comes to building a business, sometimes it's really common. It's really common for founders to feel like that the idea is where all the value is, that the idea is the thing that makes them unique. And I think that's something that founders should take another look at. In my opinion, in my experience, what I've seen is that really like groundbreaking, earth-shattering, world-changing ideas are a dime a dozen. They're literally everywhere. In fact, probably, you know, everybody has a crazy uncle that's got like 50 of these that he brings out at family parties and like, and you're like, oh yeah, the world would be better if, you know, this existed. But, I remember talking to a guy and his big idea was that he wanted to take, speed bumps everywhere and have the little motion of the speed bump generate electricity. It's a great idea. It's a great idea. I still haven't seen a speed bump that makes electricity. But that was like 20 years ago, you know, but, and that's the thing is that great ideas are not where the value is. The value is in really great execution. And I think that comes down, you know, a little maxim that an old professor of mine used to say is that an A execution of a C strategy will beat a C execution of an A strategy. And I think that's really true. Like execution is really where you make your mark. And that's really how businesses are made. If you have the ability to execute, you're unstoppable. Having a great idea means you're one of the crowd.
I like that. There's lots of different angles we can look at when we talk about execution. And it's interesting because if you come up with an idea, just like your friend came up with an idea about a speedboat, electric speedboats, okay, it's an idea. But taking this example, how do you get into the execution phase, right? How do you take that idea and put it into the physical universe? And I'm wondering whether there's a line that says, yeah, you need to build the product. We know you need to build a speedboat. You need to build all that stuff. Okay. You know, that's a sort of a given. Okay. So yes, you need to build the product and or service. But I also believe that you need to build the skills in yourself to go out there and promote that product or service, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't do one without the other, right?
That's really it. It's like the entrepreneur who is inspired by a great idea is, you know, maybe visionary and everything else, but the entrepreneur who's dedicating time to build skills is the one who can execute. And those skills are all kinds of things. Do I know where my own strengths and weaknesses are? What things do I need people around me to execute? Am I good at building a team? Am I good at motivating people? At the end of the day, the business exists because things got done, more so than things got thought.
Exactly. And the execution side of things is critical, as we said. And rather than thinking, you're doing. There's a doingness in this that needs to happen or take place rather than happen, take place. But as you hone the skills, I feel a lot of the time we always focus on the product side of things. We focus on products or services. We need to have a catalog of services, or we need to have X, Y, and Z sorted out before we actually go to market with our new product. We need to have, we need to develop something and get that up and running. But here's the rub of the green. I mean, once that's all done and dusted and looking good and maybe not shiny, but it's sort of it's workable, put it that way. I often encounter, I encounter it every day, actually. When I say often, I encounter it every day. I find that getting out there and telling people about it is a problem, right? So you've got you've gone from idea to product or service, and then you stumble in when you're going, okay, by the way, Chad, I've actually got this cool speedboat that also has, you're able to charge it electronically. You can use, maybe a battery or et cetera. And there is, a very low bar that is put in the place of promotion. They people are unaware that part of execution is actually going out and promoting. And promoting, I don't mean selling. I mean getting out there and showing people what it is that you do and or what it is the product does, right?
Yeah, that's really true. I think the sort of like Hollywood part of the story is, I came up with this idea, and everybody showed up, and now I'm a millionaire, you know? And what's more common is like you're this like 10-year overnight success, right? You went and ground it out for you know, did the hard work and made things happen. And then all of a sudden, oh, look at this great entrepreneur. But I think to your point, as you develop a product, right, I think there's kind of a fine line because taking a product out that's not ready.
Yeah.
You know, now you're delivering a really bad brand experience to customers. Mm. Everybody who's coming, you know, like out of the gate, you know, your people don't like you.
Yeah.
And nobody knows you. So the only people who know you don't like you, that's not the place you want to be. But on the other side, I think, and most of my background has been in technology and software products. Mm. So there's an infinite roadmap for software products. Yeah. And so even though you need to be creating sort of that core value, also, if you're not a little bit embarrassed at how early you go to market, you probably waited too long. There's kind of a fine line that you strike. And then also, right, early stage companies, almost always their marketing challenge is about awareness. And that's the way it should be, right? Hey, if you're really solving a problem, then there's a market out there that wants that problem solved and is willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And awareness should be the missing link. If somebody becomes aware of the product and they understand what it will do for them, they share the vision of what it will do for them, and they have that problem, they want it solved, and they're willing to pay, that should be a sale. In fact, one of the sort of catchphrases about know you have product market fit that I like is when the average salesperson encounters the average customer, do they buy? Sometimes you find as you're building a business that, okay, you hire this salesperson who is like outstanding, but he's not replicable or she's not replicable because it requires every trick in their bag of tricks to close the deal. And really what you want is, no, the awareness should be the problem, not magical sales skills. I mean, skills are great, you know, but
that's just part, that's part of the system that you have, of the business development system that you have to create. You have to create PR, you have to create marketing, you have to create sales, right? In a world of equals, good PR, good marketing equals good and qualified people in the pipeline, then, you know, deals that are closed. But, you know, I like what you're saying there. So the brand awareness is an important aspect and an essential ingredient that allows product to connect with the public. And as you start communicating and start promoting, how essential do you think building out, I'm going to put this into two questions, building out both a personal brand, right, and a company brand is to obviously gaining traction in the market and onboarding those customers that you want to onboard?
Well, I think it's common for companies at their earliest stages to be in what was called founder-led selling. The founder, the CEO does the selling. And that's a really important stage because the founder has the depth of product knowledge. And if you were to bring in either a head of sales or you start hiring, you know, like an account executive, you do that too early, then you've set that person up to fail. Because if they're a head of sales, their job is optimizing a sales team. You don't have a team or a playbook for them to optimize. So hiring a head of sales and asking them to figure out what the playbook should be is usually the wrong move. So you have this period of founder-led selling at the beginning, and founder hammers out the details of what the selling motion looks like. So, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It for sure won't be perfect, but they need something to be able to hand to that team. Whether you start with an AE, and the thing is, if you hire an AE, then the founder still is the sales manager. But the AE has something to go on, has something to work from. If you're hiring a head of sales, then you have a playbook to give them, and they have now something to optimize and a way forward. And so during that period of founder-led selling, the personal brand and the company brand may be almost one and the same. The personality of the founder is in every sales touch. It's probably in every marketing piece of collateral, every marketing message that's being sent out. So that becomes important. If it's a business where, if you're like what you and I are doing,
right?
You have this show, I have my fractional CMO consulting business, that becomes really important in those types of businesses, heavy service-oriented businesses. A lot of times personal brand is important, not just for the founder, but the sales team. But then as you grow, you get to a point where the company's voice and the company's brand becomes more important and actually requires a lot of energy to maintain, because now you have a team of people and you want to try to have the customer experience feel like it's a single voice.
And I guess as you go through that initial, I guess, trailblazing period or founder-led period, you're creating an awareness in the market, obviously, as we've already mentioned, but you're also creating because it's founder-led, because you're leading it yourself, there's some affinity to the public. You're creating an authentic connection with the people out there, right? And that's what you want. You want the public to know that you care about them, right? And you're there to, I don't want to say serve them, but to solve their problem, right?
And yeah. And I don't think service is too strong. I think asking ourselves as a company, you know, who is it that we serve?
Yeah. Because
it can't be just ourselves.
Exactly.
We have to be creating a value for somebody that they're not getting somewhere else. I don't think that's too strong. Feels right to me.
And yeah, so we go through this period, we lead in, we founders, and I like the way you described, you know, during this period, an essential part of being maybe a small business that's growing up, you may be two or three people and you go to 10, you go to 20, but an essential part when you're small, maybe, you know, 1 to 10, is wearing the different hats. But also in wearing the hats, you actually writing down what is in these hats. You know, you're saying the AE does this, X, Y, and Z. The head of sales does A, B, and C. So during that process, you're actually building your business operations. So when you go off and you hire someone, you actually know what you're looking for in that person, an individual, to fill that void rather than send it out to the ether and figure out when their person comes in, right?
Yeah, and I mean, and that can be, it can be difficult, right? Because let's say that at the beginning you're a solo founder, right? Yeah. Or a co-founding team.
Yeah.
And for sure, there are skills that neither of you have. And so you go out to hire those skills. How experienced do you need to be in this? How much coming up to speed does there need to be in this discipline that you don't know, in order for you to make good hires? And I would say two things about this. So one is that I've talked to a lot of people who, you know, I'm a consultancy, right? A fractional business is basically a consultancy. And so if they have scar tissue around hiring outsourced resources, which easy to accumulate, it's easy to spend more money and get less than you think you should. And so that makes it, there's some skepticism that we have to work through, and it becomes even more essential for me to deliver value for them quickly to kind of assuage that scar tissue. But the other part of that I would say is a good practice. So as an entrepreneur, a lot of times you are just running 100 miles an hour. You have all these hats and they all are demanding. You know, you have an endless number of things to get done in a day. And so in that environment, it can be really difficult to hit the pause button and say, hey, I'm going to create time for contemplation about my business. I'm going to take time for research about these different roles that I maybe need to hire. I'm going to take time to talk to other CEOs. The CEO can often be the loneliest job in a company. You have no peers. There's no peers within the company's hierarchy, right? Even if you're co-founders, right, your roles dictate a certain amount of isolation. And so I highly recommend that if you're in that boat, find ways to continue to receive mentorship from others, find ways to take time to talk to other CEOs. And there are meetups, other groups, things like this, networking groups. Those can be really valuable. And sometimes, you know, you may go to a networking group and you're like, I didn't get a single thing. But carving that time out of your schedule, I think, is the practice that really helps, because it won't be that way every time. You know, like talking with other people outside your business really helps you bring stuff into the business. And there's a really good book actually about this called Range. I mean, I'll find the author and send it over to you. But, and it, essentially what it's saying is that the more experiences that you have in a variety of disciplines, the more you find tidbits to bring into your area of focus.
I like it.
Anyway, recommend
the book. I like it. And I like what you're saying, because yeah, being a founder, CEO is, you're there leading a business, leading expansion, because if you don't expand, you contract, right? And what I like to say to my clients is have a battle plan, have a weekly battle plan. Look at your end of week reports, the stats and the data that you're gathering, and then decide what your battle plan is for the upcoming week, and physically block out parts in your calendar. So you've got time for, as you say, maybe it's a webinar, or maybe it's a community event. So it's there. It's not taken away by a last minute client meeting, because you know those come in, right? And educate yourself. You've got to go out there and educate yourself. And I think I come back to what you said earlier about hiring in resources that fill a gap sometimes. I also believe that, and listen, I'm a consultant, just as you are. I've been through different variations of consulting. And what I see as a business owner in general is the more knowledge you have in a particular area, you might not be the expert, but the more knowledge you have in a particular area, the better you are to lead it. And it goes without saying that, you know, if you bring in people into an organization, whether they are fractional or whether they're permanent, you're still going to lead them, right? You can't just lead them with their own resources. So you get that knowledge, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that can be a high bar, right?
Yeah.
Because it is, the bigger that you get, the more apparent it is that you cannot be a deep expert in everything. Mm. In marketing specifically as a discipline is like this because it's so broad. I think I've shared this with you before, but I was reading this stat that like 40% of all jobs in the world have some touch of marketing. And so that means that even within marketing as a discipline, there are people speaking different languages about what marketing means to them. If I'm, you know, maybe I'm an SEO consultant, I may have very little to add to a conversation around branding or PR. And yet I'm under the umbrella of marketing. Mm. And so, you know, there's the marketing, we call that T-shaped marketing, right? Where you have to have a certain amount of depth or a certain amount of breadth, and then your areas of focus where you go deep. And I think as a CEO, you have to do the same thing. There's a lot of us building a startup that I think is about sufficiency. We have certain areas where we want to be, where we're looking for perfection or for a very deep level of delivery and expertise.
Yeah.
But a lot of other things are sufficiency. Like if you're not focused on delivering services to accountants, for example, you still need accounting. You still need to have a sufficient level of understanding of financial accounting or managerial accounting, but you don't need to be able to teach college classes about it. Right. And so that level of sufficiency is like, okay, I need to know this well enough to call BS. And that's sufficient, right? And then otherwise, it's being open and being really focused on results. So if I have let's say I've hired somebody in a discipline that I'm not strong in, and I'm feeling like things aren't going well there. Well, now the skill is more about communicating in an environment that's not your specialty. Because it's like, hey, look, we need to take whatever function this is and distill it down to results-based, distill it down into execution again. And this is common from everybody, right? I think this is a rule of thumb that I use. So if I'm hiring, and it works all kinds, like if I'm hiring designers, if I'm hiring attorneys, if I'm hiring, you know, you name it, the specialty. When you write the check, you should feel like, I cannot believe that they're only asking for this much money. Because that's when you can tell that the leverage and the value creation is really there. And I don't mean that, you know, everybody should undercharge, but if they're really solving problems, they should, and like, you know, development team, same way. Yeah. The worst thing you can have is a developer who, no matter what you're asking for, it's always 2 weeks. It's always 2 weeks. You know, I had gone through that, right? Every time I had a problem with the app.
Man, when I worked at Accenture, that's what we used to say. And then I was like, well, why is it 2 weeks? It's always 2 weeks. And the client's like, Richard, really? I'm like, yeah, well, no, actually it takes an hour. Yeah, I love the guys at Accenture. Exactly. It's time for the code to get from Bratislava to the UK and then to New York, right?
Look, we're talking about a copy change. Give me the WordPress login. I will do it myself. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I hear you. And I guess as we talked about, you know, the idea of a business and making certain that we are always actioning, being the cause of our situation. We've dived into looking at building a public brand or public identity, let's call it identity, and dives into the various areas of making certain when we grow up as a business, wear the right hats and also give control to individuals when required, right? But also obviously maintain control as we scaling up our businesses and also, you know, what we're doing in our sort of areas. And, you know, during this cycle, I feel like there's a consistent need to always go out there and promote, market, and sell. It's not a one-off. It's consistency. You're out there day in, day out. You're promoting. And I don't mean promoting as in Bob or Jill, the window cleaner, you know, promoting a $5.99 special, right? I mean promoting value. right? You market and you're creating that once, and then finally you also closing some deals. And as we go through that process, do you see this as a consistent iteration and a consistent movement upwards as we expand, get more clients on, get more employees in, or is it something else?
Yeah, good question. I think that to a great extent, promotion is, it's like the unsung hard work, right? It's the grind that makes everything happen. And you know, it's like the accelerator, your foot's on the accelerator. And if you stop it, you will feel that your momentum slows down. And momentum's really important, especially with an early company, right? Every sort of inch of ground you gain with the customer, inch of market share, let's say that you're...
The public, right? Because it could be, you know, you're going out there, you might be at a point in time raising funds, or at a point in time actually getting some people in the door. So, you know, I think just to put that out there, I think it's important that we don't always just look at the end game, i.e. the dollar in the bank account, but also the other parts of our business that need good promotion to get good people in, also to get maybe good investors and good money in, right?
And I think you highlight something that I think can sometimes be a pitfall for entrepreneurs, especially if they're looking at their marketing function. Marketing, especially for technology companies, tends to fall into two camps. One side is the creative disciplines, your writing, your designers, various types of artwork and communication. And the other side is a little more science. It's the marketing ops side of things. It's your demand generation, all of the tools that you use, your marketing automation platform, your CRM, all of the things that create the infrastructure for delivering messages out to your prospects and customers. And so usually branding kind of gets lumped into the creative side. We kind of have this simplistic view of branding that it's like, oh, I want to get my logo on a bunch of stuff. And, you know, I want to see my colors everywhere. And at the core of it, branding is actually not, you can influence it, but you can't control it because it doesn't live inside your company. It actually lives inside the minds of your customers. This goes back to awareness being kind of the number one challenge when And so as you go to hire marketing talent, sometimes you can have marketing talent that is focused on branding. And usually they're solid. They'll understand this, right? They'll know that it's that they're not just about look and feel, but they're actually about how do we craft our impressions in the minds of the customer. And sometimes there are marketers who have focused on spending that doesn't have, you know, a marketing spend, whether it be ad spend or even just your return on marketing dollars, that is not focused on revenue. And with early companies, usually I recommend this. You usually need the demand gen side first, because not to the exclusion of branding, but you need a minimal amount of creative deployed in a demand gen engine.
Yeah.
Because that brings in the customers. And the customers bring the revenue that you need to survive. And everything at the earliest stages is that serious. It's like survival. If we don't make these sales, we aren't going to have enough money to make payroll. On the... So typically, if you're looking at your first marketing hires, I recommend that you're looking at demand gen, marketing ops side of the being hires. But as the founder, that means you keep the branding hat, has to be part of you. And branding, instead of being a department in the creative side of marketing, which I love, is where, you know, if I could, I would spend all my time in that side. Instead, what the branding has to be is something that, as the founder, you cause to permeate the entire organization. Everything you touch, that promotional side of things, it doesn't mean we're not ignoring it by prioritizing our hires on demand gen. We're taking the responsibility that branding permeates everything. The personality of our brand, you know, we're projecting a persona as much as we're trying to attract a certain persona. Our voice, all of that.
It's interesting because I think the problems that entrepreneurs or founders have is they can't really tell which droplets in the ocean are the ones that are really important, right? And the ones that are just like, who gives a shit? Let's just dismiss those. And those little droplets are, some of them are vital. You know, things, you mentioned brand here, you know, what makes up a brand, right? You know, leadership. You have to have a good leadership team. You have to be a good leader. We talk about founder leading a brand. Relationships. Okay, well, you know, if if you have shitty relationships with your investors, with your customers, with your prospects, maybe with your employees, you know, you're not going to have a great brand. And you know, communication as well. We talked about messaging. But again, if your messaging is sort of out of sync for whatever reason, and messaging doesn't just mean, you know, the stuff that is going out there on LinkedIn or on Facebook or, you know, on your website, but it's your email to your colleague. That is brand, right? If you're rude to that person.
You know, like I tell this with my kids, right? Like, I know that, you know, the way that you are dressed, the way that you comport yourself, everything about that is sending nonverbal communication about who you are to everybody around
you. Exactly.
And sometimes they like to say, they like to feel like that they're immune from the effects of the messages that they're sending out that are nonverbal. Yeah. It's like, you're not, everybody's sending those out. And one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking about is that, oh, never mind. I lost. Right. It must've been a lie.
Okay, cool. But yeah, I think it's an essential ingredient. So I think as we've gone through the different elements here and look really at, I guess, the front part of your engine, the marketing, the PR, some sales, building out the certain functions as you scale up. And then obviously, you know, branding part of that and making certain it's a strong brand, not just externally, i.e. the lipstick, but, you know, more... It's the blood that runs through your veins, right? That's your brand.
I remembered what it was. And I remembered something that you said that triggered it, which was that your brand is about leadership.
Yeah.
And I really believe you're right about that.
Yeah.
One of the sort of early books that I read in my career is called A New Brand World by Scott Bakery. Still a great. Mm-hmm. And one of the sort of key principles in there is that your brand is the combination of commitment and sacrifice. So what you're doing, and you were talking about this, right? So about these little droplets and you see that, right? Early on, people are like, oh, I have people who've responded to me. I have only a handful of customers, right? Maybe I've got under 10 customers and they don't look like each other. They don't look homogeneous. One guy's over here, it's a B2B manufacturing thing. Another guy's, I got a B2C retail thing happening over here, and I don't know what to do. The thing that you can't keep both of those customers. I mean, or you can't build your business on both of those customers in the long haul. And so at some point you're going to have to make a commitment one way or the other. And that commitment, the flip side of that coin is you're also sacrificing the one that you didn't commit to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that allows people to know where you are and what you stand for. One of the things that I like to tell companies early on is understanding what your principles are as a company, not so much about having a nice mission statement. That's an easy pot shot to take, right? Yeah. Most mission statements suck and everybody knows this. But when we talk about the principles...
Boots mission statements. Dinosaur statement. Don't worry, guys. You're going on.
But one of the ways to think about your principles as a company is, what do you care about more than money?
Yeah.
It's like, well, is there anything? Like, I'm in business for money, right? I'm earning a living. And it's like, well, there have to be things that you wouldn't do for money. And this is the same in your personal life, right? What would you not do no matter how much somebody paid you? Most of us, I think, have those things. And that becomes the definition of what your brand is. It's like, oh, you stand for this. Yeah. And that means all the negative space, all the stuff that you aren't about is not part of your brand. And it's okay. But commitment.
I love that, because, I mean, we've gone in a bit of detail, because that brand actually sits above everything, right? It's this light that shines and takes you towards somewhere, some destination, and also should run through the veins of your company, right? It's the culture. It's everything else that makes it up. And if you get it right, and it's hard. It's not easy, right? You have to maybe take a couple of iterations, a couple of shots. And it's not just words on a piece of paper or words on a blackboard. It's what you live and breathe every day, right? That makes up something that
you want to engage with. It'd be tough. Like you wake up one day and you're like, shoot, I've built this brand and it's not right. Or something's wrong about it.
Yeah, you get punched in the face by Mike Tyson. You're like,
yeah, that's right.
I'm going to want that.
So it's okay to retool. You know, it's like, okay, to, and you think about what this will mean, like as it flows downstream into your company in ways that create incredible efficiencies. So if you think about it, here's my brand, here's what I stand for. As a result of that, my company culture is this way. And that means that my employees know what we care about as a company. And that means that they can make decisions without asking permission. And now all of a sudden I have real operational efficiency with my frontline employees.
Yeah, love it. I mean, it's, love it. And as we cycle through the motions and we're building up our business, what do you think the realities are of building a business rather than scaling a business? What are the realities of building a business? So we're talking about the essential ingredients there. What have you seen and what are you seeing right now as you're building yours up?
Yeah. Well, so I think about that in terms of stage, yeah, right? I mean, building a business, maybe that takes you from inception all the way to you sell your business off or you do an IPO, you know, someplace where, or whatever, you retire. At some place, there's an end and an exit. Mm. And perhaps building your business includes that whole gamut. But the beginning steps, right, the foundational building blocks are really getting everything in place so to position yourself to scale. And so what that means is you need a scalable and repeatable process for acquiring customers, for actually delivering, you know, fulfillment, delivering your products to customers. Are there places in that? And in the beginning, it's about viability, right? Mm-hmm. Will anybody buy this? Will they pay me enough that I can, you know, are the unit economics enough that I can continue to produce it? And you're ironing all those things out. I think we spoke about this before, but one of the maxims that I love about early businesses comes from a VC in our local ecosystem, a guy named Paul Alstrom, who wrote a book called Nail It, Then Scale It. I'm dropping book hints out there. These are good references.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he says in the book is the entrepreneurs innovate, customers validate. So when you think about that it's like the customer, if you go to ask the customer what you should build, they probably can't tell you. And there's many like Steve Jobs quotes or Henry Ford quotes on the walls of businesses about the customer doesn't know. And that is true. The customer doesn't know what new thing, what innovation they may want. But what they will do is when you present it to them, they will tell you if you've got it right. So you can't go out and build this and just ignore the customer. It's up to you to come up with a new, fresh way to solve a problem. And the customer will tell you if you got it right. They'll validate if that is right. And if you get both of those things working, where your idea is now novel and the customer is validating it for you, and they validate it by giving you money. Because think about what that means, right? When somebody gives you money, it's not just, oh, hey, thanks. You know, you think that I'm handsome or you like what I said. No, what they're doing is that they think they're cheating you. They think that they're giving you this money, which is less than the value that they're getting. And you want that, right? And even when it comes to scaling your business and fundraising, right? What's the cheapest money you can raise? Profit.
Yeah.
It's exchanging your product for money. That's the cheapest money you can raise.
Totally agree.
And anyway, the early days is about building a foundation that irons out those kinks, flaws that, and every startup has flaws that could metastasize and kill the company if you don't get them worked out by the time you're scaling. So anyway.
No, it's true. Listen, some really salient points and reinforcing points and vital points that you just run through there. And you know, as we finish off this section of the show and we go into the flash round, which is a bit of fun, I'd just like to say, everyone, just it's important that as you walk through and you start up your business, you know, action. Be the cause, not the effect. If you have an idea, go out there and make it happen, right? It's up to you initially. But don't forget, as you're developing out the product and or service, that you need an engine. You need a PR engine, a marketing engine, and a sales engine, as Chad was saying, to actually validate whether your idea, or product, or service is actually going to be foolproof, right? And actually going to be able to do what it is you wanted to do. So important topics and important subjects that we walk through. And lastly, brand is an essential ingredient. It's not lipstick. I think we all know it's not lipstick, but don't treat it as such. Treat it as something that is a core part of what you're doing. And then you'll see some expansion, right?
Just to respond to what you said is early in my career, I had a mentor who talked about this bias for action that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been a principle that has really served me. And the thing is, like, if you go look up action bias, there's a psychological principle about action bias that's actually negative, that's saying, hey, people have a bias towards doing something versus doing nothing, even if doing nothing might give them the better result. But when it comes to entrepreneurship, if you couple action bias with a fail fast and fail forward mentality, then it still doesn't matter. Right? It doesn't matter, because what you're doing is, I'm getting to a no faster is just as valuable to me as getting to a yes, because I'm getting the information that I need to move forward. And so bias for action definitely is an attitude and perspective in business that I recommend. And speed, like speed becomes one of your big differentiators, and the analysis paralysis waiting.
But also action, right? Action. I mean, hey, listen, speed is action. Speed is action. Yeah. Speed is action. If we're going out there and pondering whether something's complex or complicated, no one cares, right? Go out there and do it. You know, action.
And like, I realized, like, we just a few minutes ago talked about, hey, take time to like pause and contemplate. And there's a balance there, right?
At the end of the week though, right? So, you know, sure. You have to have a better plan. You have to look at the data because you can't be shooting in the wind. There's time to do that. So you look at the data. It might take you, you know, in all honesty, I have 2 hours on a Friday that I look at and I check out all the data in my business. And I tell my clients to do exactly the same things. And then you can actually strategize for the next week. It's good.
And what I keep getting surprised at, I mean, I've been at this for a while now. And what I keep getting surprised at is that if I find something and I focus on it and I just wake up every morning and I do stuff, pushing that direction, it's not very long before I look back and I was like, I did a lot of stuff and things have moved. Like the business has grown, the objectives that I was after, I've hit some of those. And so that the bias for action is really a strong thing.
Cool. And now we go into the flash round. The flash round is a bit of fun at the end of every podcast. Yeah, Chad's rubbing his hands. I'm going to rub my hands as well.
Pretending to be ready.
Yeah, he's ready. So the rules of the game are, there's not much rules of the game, but it's all a bit of fun at the end. There's 3-in-1. Ultimately, I ask Chad 3 questions and I give him the mic and he asks me one. They are quick questions. So yes or no, or one word answers. And then, you know, spin the mic around, and I'm sure you've got something up your sleeve for me. But let's get the show on the road. And this is the first one. No trick questions, by the way. All right. Here we go. So what comes first, brand, product, or marketing?
Product.
Okay. What should you focus on, caring for your customers or driving revenue?
I don't think those are mutually exclusive.
Very calculated. I like it. Right, he's in the chair. Yes. Very good. I like it. Okay. What should I might know your answer now to the next one. What is best to do as you work in and you scale it, or you're starting out your business and building your business? Should you hire the knowledge or should you gain the knowledge before you hire it?
I think that you need to know where your gaps are. Being self-aware is important. Hire for your gaps. Hire people who are strong where you are weak. And really, we talked about kind of like knowing these well enough to be able to call BS. But underneath that, it's the relationship of trust is really what makes that work.
Yeah, you're right.
You need to plug somebody in who's strong where you're weak, and you have a relationship of trust with them that is sincere.
No, listen, and love your answer. All of them. Especially the middle one. Okay. Now I give you the mic and,
All right.
Take any question.
So my question for you is, where is the most recent place that you've found inspiration? A book, a podcast, a film?
Okay. So this is a good one. So my most recent place I found inspiration, I'm actually going to say there's a couple of people I work with in my team, actually, that you talk about hiring people that are above and beyond, and you know, you trust them and what have you. And I'm lucky enough to have a team like that. And you know, the guys and the girls I have in my team inspire me every day. If I'm really honest with you, there's lots of great advice, great ideas that come out of this this box or this team, and it's just pretty cool to see what we're doing together. If I'm really honest with you, so yeah, I'd say maybe it's a bit of a cliched answer, maybe not. I don't know, but right now I'm getting my inspiration from the team that I'm working with. If it's bigger than that, and we look back maybe at my life, I think my mom is the biggest and one of the biggest inspirations. My mom and my wife, actually, two totally different backgrounds. My mom being a single parent and having to wrestle with bringing me and my brother up, alone and by herself, running three jobs.
You never gave her any trouble, right?
Yeah, no, running three jobs, man. I mean, we're always on the sports field, right? sports. Yeah, running three jobs and giving us the opportunity. And then my wife for all the support and care and attention that she's given me and my kids. It's an amazing environment that she's created for us at home. So yeah, a bit of a long answer, but I think those three things are sort of where I get.
No, I'm inspired.
There we go. I like it. Okay, and as we clock off and we leave today, Chad, mate, how can everyone, or how can the folk out there, if they want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me through my website. It's CMOZen, so CMO and then ZEN.com. Yeah. And love to chat. Thank you so much for the time today. It's been delightful to spend with you, and hope there's a few nuggets in there that people can use.
No, definitely been awesome. And listen, everyone, as you know, my book is out right now, Unlocking in Profit Zones. If you want to sign up and get a copy, you can log into my website at www.scaleupconsulting.co.uk/signup. And you'll be directed through a little process. And at the end of that, you'll get the book. So you're looking forward to getting this out live, and also obviously looking forward to hearing your reviews of my book, and also off the back of this podcast, and looking forward to speaking to everyone soon.